And now this is talking with May Kaftan Kasim, that was your name at that time anyway.
Yes.
At IRSI on August 13th, 1981. And can I ask, first of all, what did you go to Harvard as an undergraduate also, or only
no,
as a graduate?
Only as a graduate student.
And what did you study as an undergraduate?
I did math and physics in Manchester University.
I see. And how was it that you were attracted to the astronomy program at Harvard rather than Jodrell Bank?
Yeah. Well, I must say it was ignorance more than anything else. I didn't know. I guess I'm a little bit somewhat different from the normal graduate student at that time, is that I didn't know really anything about astronomy. It was it was by chance that I won a scholarship to study astronomy.
Okay.
And so, without knowing anything about the programs, I thought of the top schools. I applied
right.
to Harvard and Berkeley and MIT, and MIT sent my application to Harvard and so on. And Berkeley accepted me, and in fact, that sort of always, I always felt very sad afterwards that I didn't go to Berkeley, because I saw Struve many years back. He came to one of my graduate student luncheons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how he could have remembered me. I was very impressed that he just turned toward me and said, yeah, we were expecting you. Why didn't you come?
Yes,
and I
sir.
Thought that was very human and very lovely of him,
yes.
because, you know, he was a big man. I was a little graduate student.
Right. But so it was just astronomy. It wasn't particularly radio astronomy.
It wasn't even, yeah, it was astronomy. I had no idea about radio astronomy. And if I had known, maybe I would have been attracted to Manchester.
Right.
But at that time, I knew very little about astronomy, so I just came to Harvard.
Well, how was it that you got attracted to radio astronomy then?
Well, obvious answer, Bart Bok. I mean, of course, I was at the time when news discoveries were being made. You know, I mean, the 21 centimeter line was just getting into its own. But Bart Bok was, you know, he was the motor behind
right.
everything. You know, he started
right.
the radio astronomy project. He had
right.
Heeshan and Lilly, I suppose, on the first.
They
put up that antenna.
But then what, I'd be very interested to know, all right, he's with his great enthusiasm, sold you that this is something you should work on. But then what do you actually do then? Do you immediately go out and start observing, or do you read books on radio techniques? Or?
No, exactly. Yeah. All right. I think I would have done it differently if I was at another school. But things were very loose and very much at ease at Harvard.
Yes.
You know, I mean, once you were a graduate student, then you were one of the family and they sort of let you do what you want. And they expected you to know and to find out for yourself. I actually needed more guidance than the others, because mm-hmm. I had absolutely no background in astronomy at all. So Bok sold me on the idea of going into radio astronomy,
mm-hmm.
and you know, his main interest was galactic structure. So he proposed to me to look at the Cygnus region, and I looked at the Cygnus region, and boy, was it exciting! There were lots of good things in the Cygnus
mm-hmm.
region, as you know. So that's what I did for my thesis.
Right, but how did you learn how to observe?
Oh, I just went out with the others. I never had any formal training at
right.
all.
So it was just the older graduate students?
I for example, shared an office with Coach Umenin, and I learned a great deal simply by being with him.
Mm-hmm.
And where I was timid and couldn't ask anybody else,
yes.
I felt very much at ease with Kochu, and I could ask him.
Right.
So it was very much like, you know, you learn as you go along.
Right, right.
And it was an atmosphere which was really wonderful. But I didn't appreciate it at the time. I wanted the formality of training. I really wanted...
Of courses, you mean?
Yes. We had courses, but it was very much, you know, like I remember Professor Whipple, who's... after I think a year and a half or something of courses, or 2 years, I think I was short of some credit. So I went to him and I said, look, I'm short of credit. Can I have a summer course with you?
Right.
He said, sure. How much credit do you want?
Right.
He gave me the credit. He never saw me that summer. Right. You know? They were like that.
Yes.
But also they were, I mean, you also got to be with them. Be with these people as individuals,
yes, right.
and I got to love the field just by being with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Although I didn't go really with any interest in astronomy, I developed it by simply being involved with the day-to-day life
right.
in the observatory.
I see.
Whipple used to have us to his homes, all the graduate students, and they play mahjong and they.
Yeah.
Play cards, and some people would sit and talk seriously, but mostly everybody just
So it's a very social group, you're saying.
Extremely social, and well, but somehow you got something else out of it, because you would also, know them and learn about how they thought and mm-hmm. where the values, where the real right. values were, not just the techniques. And
right.
This is what I missed at the time. I was hoping to get thorough training, and I didn't get that. What right. I got was more the love for the field, and I just had to allow myself to pick up the bits.
Right.
Professor, Dr. Or the director, he had stepped down as a director before I went in there.
Gold?
No. Gold was never director of Harvard College Observatory.
Oh, of the whole observatory?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why do I forget him? The big...
Shapley.
Shapley, yes. Well, Shapley, even though he was no longer director, again, he used to have the graduate students go to his place up mm-hmm. in Vermont, and they'd chop some wood and right. spend the whole day on the place, and would look at his anthill, and
right.
it's just sort of observe his way of looking at life and nature.
Yes.
It was, to me, it was, these were very, very formative years in my mm-hmm. attitude towards astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I got the best training there.
Specifically in radio, well, for instance, it would seem to me that the techniques, I mean, the people that were maintaining and building the equipment,
yeah.
Must have been a different group from the graduate students. Is that true?
Well, or? No, not at all. Because I think the people who were building and working there were Doc Hewen was responsible. Yes. Frank Drake, who was a graduate
working,
student with
but
me.
But he was working for a business primarily.
Yes, but you know, again, he was sort of like part of the group. I never even knew at the time what his position was. He did give a course. He gave a course jointly with... I can't remember, in radio astronomy. And that was the only course which had anything about technique, about receivers. I felt, completely yes. lost in that side. I mean, I was completely lost. But then, Frank Drake was one yes. of the people who worked with instrumentation. And you felt so close with the graduate students that you could ask them.
Yes, I see.
But there was... Now, Heeshan and Lily sort of got out before I got into radio astronomy, so I didn't...
When did you actually start working with radio astronomy? You started in 55.
It must be 55. No, I went into Harvard summer of 53.
I see.
September 53. And I think must have been 55. Before... Bach started me, then he went to Australia.
Right.
And he was my thesis director, but he never really... he expected me to keep sending him chapters and things, and I couldn't do that.
That doesn't really work.
It didn't work. So I was left again on my own.
Right.
And Mrs. Gaposchkin was wonderful, and she helped me a great deal. She doesn't know anything about the field, but she sat down with me, and she discussed whatever I said from different points of view, and right. she made me look at it, in a way which was very helpful, because she was, came from an entirely another side.
Right.
And she had a good reflective way of looking. And Dave Glazer also helped me with he was no radio astronomer, but then I'd take my results and sit with him and he would discuss them mm-hmm. with me. So I kind of talked with various people. Well, I was my own thesis director.
One thing that has been said, and there are some facts to back this up, is that that the techniques were somewhat lacking there, in the sense that it turned out that there were various mistakes and over-interpretations, maybe too much enthusiasm in getting results.
Right.
What do you think was the result of that? I mean, was it because of this too loose a direction, really?
I think probably so. I think it's the personalities of the people that were there.
And the students themselves, you mean?
The professors, I think.
Oh, the professors.
Yes,
yeah.
I think you get the guidance from the professors.
Right.
Bart Bock has a lot of enthusiasm and a love for the field, and he didn't know anything about radio astronomy right. at all, no techniques.
Right.
So he left it entirely to the students. I mean, Heeshan and Lily just ran the station while they were there, and then when they went away, there was, I think, Frank Drake and Coach O'Menon, and they had, what's his name, Larry, who was a technician. Very good man. He's. I think he went back to NRAO later. There were a few people, and they were entirely responsible. And it was between the graduate students and these people. And Doc Hewen sort of had a very vague relationship. And so they would go to Doc whenever there were any problems.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know really how the thing ran. It just ran itself. It's
right.
just very loose. And
I
felt that I would wished I had gone to Berkeley, because I would have gotten better training.
Yeah.
But I think I got something else from Harvard,
right.
which I would have never gotten anywhere else.
Right.
I didn't appreciate it at the time. I like it now.
Well, what were the main results of your study of the Cygnus region? You studied a 20 degree by 25 degree region, I guess making a contour maps of the
yes,
region?
Yes, yes. I made contour maps and I compared them to the optical information. I had the dust,
right.
The distribution of OB stars, and I was trying to find out. I had better resolution than the Dutch had in their survey. You know, this was very soon after the BAN 4052.
That's right.
And so I was able to resolve, for example, I think now it's a long time ago, but I think around the old LMB, L44, 45, there was a double peak to the zero,
yes.
Zero arm. And it was obvious that there was two ways to look at it. But I had I think my interpretation at the time that it was actually two different masses, and that the association there was a Cygnus 6, I believe.
That's
or
right.
4, it's too long ago. There was a Cygnus.
An OB association.
Right. And at the time I thought that maybe it's an expanding association and that the hydrogen is expanding and therefore you have this double peak. And I meant to look into that later, but I never. That was my last 21 centimeter study. I didn't get to do anymore.
Well, you also made a comment on rotation curves that
yes.
you felt that Weaver's was better than Schmidt's.
Right,
the
right.
The abstract
right.
I have.
Yes, yes, yes. And again, that was. And I can't remember the detail, but I think it was very clear from the results I had that the data supported the Weaver model.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me, it's too long ago, yes. I can't remember. But at the time, it was very clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I discussed it with Mrs. Kaposhkin, and I discussed it with Dave Laser. And they, both of them, not knowing anything about this, looked at the data, and they felt it was strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that statement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, you got your thesis finished in 1958, I have here.
Yes.
And then did you continue in radio astronomy after that?
No, I returned to Iraq. Hoping that I can go and set up an astronomy department, and there was nothing I could do. I got there just before the revolution.
Oh, yes.
It was a revolution, 1958, and with a lot of pressure, they allowed me to teach one course to physics students, third, fourth year physics students. So I taught a course in astronomy and. I had a very rough time myself, personally, because my father died, I had twins, and one of my children died. I was pregnant when I took my examination.
Oh, really?
Yes. I took my oral, I think, in January or February or something, and the baby was born in the end of May. So I had a very, very difficult time, and I wrote back to Dave Laser and said, look, I can't stay here, can I come back? And so he talked to, Tommy Gold,
yes.
And they offered me a position.
So
I came back to Harvard.
Came back when?
In 59.
In 59?
Yeah, and I worked there for 3 years.
Okay, and can you tell me what you worked on during that period?
That's a very vague period in my life. I really was not very happy with what I did. Tommy Gold, soon after my arrival, picked up and left.
He left, right.
And I was left high
it's
and
second,
dry.
The second time that's happened to
yeah.
you.
Yeah. So I went to the radio astronomy group, and Ed Lilly was very nice to me and said, come along. And I made some excellent observations, I thought, at the time. In fact, I made, I think, the first detailed map of, it was a beautiful map, I can't even remember what it was now, but I never published it.
Was it something in our galaxy or an external
galaxy? Yeah, no, it was either, it wasn't Cas A, It was the Cygnus loop. Yes.
In the continuum
the
or in the line?
In the continuum. Very soon after that was published. I don't know if it was published by somewhere else.
Yes.
Not very soon. Maybe a year or two later. I can't remember, but I know when I saw it. I think it came out from Leiden, but I had a very good map.
And what kind of frequency was this?
I'm trying to remember. At that time, they had the big telescope.
The Agassiz.
Yeah, you know, my thesis was done on the small one.
Right.
But then they had was it 60?
60 foot. Right.
Yeah. So I used the 60 foot. And I think, I swear I can't.
Well, perhaps it was 21 centimeter continuum.
Maybe, because at that time they were working on a Maser
That's right.
21 centimeter. I think it might have
which
been 21
Brian Cooper
centimeter.
Yes. Worked on.
Jelly and Cooper.
But why wasn't this published?
I sort of didn't. I don't know. I guess I was thoroughly isolated, and I had.
So weren't getting the support.
Well, no. Ed Lilly was really very supportive, but I needed to discuss the calibration. I was unhappy about the calibration. I wanted some numbers to so that I'd publish it with confidence. And somehow, again, there was the same loose atmosphere where I couldn't discuss this with anybody. And I wouldn't publish anything unless I was sure of the calibration, so I just forgot about it. And after, a year or so, I switched. I felt terribly isolated with this group. There were not many people, really. I think, who came at that time? I think, what's his name, who's at Mass now? Huguenin came.
Yes.
Then he started a strong group, I think, at the time. But I felt isolated and really didn't know where I was going, so I went and I dropped out of the radio group, and I did some statistical work with Dave Laser on the galaxy. You know, he was working Concept Galaxy, so I worked with him on that. And then the president of the university in Baghdad was at MIT for a conference, so he called me and he came and he said, "Oh, why don't you come back? We're going to build an observatory and we need you," and etc. etc. So I submitted my resignation and went back.
But I see that you, at a 1960 AAS meeting, that you were co-author on a paper that was discussing 21-centimeter H1 maser observations of galaxies.
Yes.
So you did get involved in some extragalactic...
I did. This is where I worked with the group. I mean, this was right at the beginning. Wait a minute. Have I got... No, 61, that's...
This was 60.
Yes. 60. Okay. So that was the first year I got there. I guess I got involved with them. You can see I even blocked it out of my memory. It doesn't. I did work with them and I did make some observations. And then there was a joint paper published. And then I was doing my own work.
I'd be interested in how you saw it, if you can put yourself back in that time, how you saw your group compared to the Dutch and the Australian 21-centimeter groups.
At that time,
yes.
I'm not the best person to comment on that because it's very vague in my mind. You can see I even forgot I did some work there.
Yeah.
It's a period in which I wasn't involved very deeply for some reason. As I say, I was isolated, and
yeah.
It might have been my own personal problems more than anything else.
Yeah.
And I was too much detached from what was going on. And so I can't make a good comment.
Well,
I was much more alive when I was a graduate student. I knew what was going on. But when at that period, I was kind of...
Well, what about the earlier period relative to the Dutch efforts? I mean, how did you see your relationship with the Dutch?
Well, you know, BAN 452 was our Bible. I mean, really, that was for the graduate students who did 21-centimeter work.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked, I mean, the Dutch were just it. I mean, we just followed in their footsteps.
Yes.
And we knew more about the Dutch work than the Australian work, for example. But there were some people, you know, Kirk came and introduced us a little bit to what they were doing. But mainly the Dutch was the greater influence on that group. And again, I think it's through
Bach. Of course,
Bach
is a Dutchman.
It's through Bach, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I think that's all I wanted to ask about, unless you wanted to make any other comments about radio astronomy up until the early 60s.
No, I really don't know what comments I might make, except that I have been, you know, I still sort of sit in awe in at some of the things. Like, for example, I think the foresight that Bach had, that this is a field you should enter into, even though he didn't know anything about it. You know, if you know Bach, he's got a personality where he's got the insight. He realized this was the field to go, and he pushed all his might.
Yes.
And then, of course, they eased him out very much. And that bothered us a great deal, that he was sort of eased out. Now, Mrs. Gaposchkin had nothing to do with radio astronomy, but she was going to write a history. Did she ever do
it? A history of what?
Of the Harvard College Observatory. And she made some comments to me.
No.
Yeah, I kept begging her to do it, you know, and... she would say yes, but you know, if I do it, then people would be very upset because I would blow some big bubbles.
Yeah.
She felt very strongly about how women were treated at Harvard.
Oh yes, in the early part of the century.
Well, even herself, she has a long tale to tell, and how she was treated until
Well, I hope she's writing this down, even if it doesn't get published.
Mrs. Kaposhkin, she's dead.
She died a year or two ago. Yes, you're right.
Yes.
Sorry.
And
I never knew her.
If she did write it.
Yeah.
She was all time mixed up with her husband. She did not dare publish another book because, you know, the Harvard Press took her books like that and they wouldn't take his, Sergei's, and so that bothered her and she didn't want him to be upset, which is a great pity. Because she writes beautifully.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That ends the interview with May Kaftan Kasim on 13th August 1981.